You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here, we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host, and today we're going to talk about recent events in Afghanistan. As most of you are now aware, earlier this month, President Biden announced the withdrawal of all American forces from Afghanistan, and that has created somewhat of a crisis in the country. We can all debate whether or not that decision was the right decision or whether it was an ill-informed one, but the truth is the removal of American troops has thrown that country into somewhat of a transition. And because of that transition, there are multitudes of people now in distress, some of them Afghan citizens, others people from other places, including America and around the world. We're going to talk today with a number of people who are close to the situation in Afghanistan and trying to gain an understanding or a picture of what's going on. We're going to do this because we also realize that there probably will be an American philanthropic response. And I know that, like with any civilian or human tragedy that occurs around the world, Americans step up to give what they can. And I'm hoping that through this interview, we'll get an understanding of how we can reply. Now, you should also be aware that there are numbers of humanitarian organizations remaining on the ground in Afghanistan, and we hope we can get some sense of that. But we're going to start our conversation today speaking with, as I said, a number of people, but Mariah Smith is here, and she is the Development Committee Chair of the Board of Directors for No One Left Behind. And No One Left Behind is an organization that works in Afghanistan to help individuals get settled here in the United States from Afghanistan, people who are particularly at risk of harm. And there's a special visa program that they work to get people here settled through. And we're going to talk with Mariah about how that organization is able to conduct its work under these very difficult circumstances. Mariah, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thank you, Art, and thank you for having us on today.
Mariah, you retired from the Army after 20 years, and during that time, you served as a military police officer and a graduate of the FBI National Academy. And as it turns out, you saw fit, after serving in Afghanistan, to work with this organization, No One Left Behind, to try to make the situation easier for people who have helped us achieve or aim to achieve our objectives there. Can you tell us first about the organization, No One Left Behind?
No One Left Behind has been around for several years. We're a 501c3, and our board is comprised of a lot of military veterans, former Hill staff, people with connections to the State Department, and people in the national security community. And all of us had some connection to Afghanistan or Iraq. And we wanted to find a way to help the Afghans and the Iraqis that served alongside the U.S. military and the U.S. government during the war on terror.
Now, how does your organization go about assisting, and who in particular are some of the people that are especially vulnerable that you help?
A program called the Special Immigrant Visa Program has existed since 2009, and its goal is to help Afghan and Iraqis who served with American troops and with the American government immigrate to the United States. Janice Shinwari, one of our co-founders, created the organization when he himself immigrated to the United States as an Afghan translator. And since that time, our mission has been to help, we call them the SIVs, help them when they arrive to the United States get resettled and to thrive here in their new home. In recent weeks, we have moved closer and closer to the front edge of assisting the Afghans right now that are trying to leave Afghanistan after the U.S. withdrawal.
Mariah, there are many people who've served in Afghanistan and Iraq, and yet not all of them choose to take on such a philanthropic role as you have with No One Left Behind. What was it in your mind that, and maybe in your heart too, that led you to want to get involved and make a difference here?
I served a tour in Iraq in 2003 when I was a young platoon leader, and then later I served three tours in Afghanistan between the years of 2007 and 2014. And it was the most formative and important years of my life. The ability to be involved with other service members and with our government and with the Afghan and Iraqi people to try and help the unified mission of bringing stability and fighting the terrorist effort shaped me in a way, and I wanted to continue that service and continue some form of assistance even after I left my active duty Army career.
So you've brought along with you a couple colleagues, and I would like to engage them a little bit in this conversation as well. Khalid Hamidi is a SIV ambassador for D.C. and Northern Virginia, and Hamidi advises Afghan legal matters as a foreign legal consultant under the Virginia Bar and as an active member of the Afghan Independent Bar Association. And he possesses over 12 years of counseling and litigation experience in private practice as well. Hamidi, I want to ask you about your life and what has led you to this role that you're currently playing. And I know that you're here now for 4 years. How did that whole transition come about for you?
Thank you very much. In 2012, when I applied for the first time for the SIV, I thought that this process is going to be very smooth. But unfortunately, I ended up going through the long journey. Like, it took me around more than 4 years with the assistance of my former supervisor, who is now the chairman of the No One Left Behind. Finally, I got my visa and I came into the United States in 2016. I left everything behind. So with the help of this organization, No One Left Behind, my supervisor, James, he actually helped me to get my visa. So that was the main idea for me to be interested with the mission of this organization. So a week after I came to the United States, I started volunteering for the No One Left Behind. And then I went with a group of other volunteers, collected some furniture for the other newcomers. And from there, since then, I've been working with No One Left Behind. But since I was an attorney back in Afghanistan, and I wanted to use all the experience that I obtained back in Afghanistan by working with the American advisors over there, so I started preparing myself to get certification here in Virginia. So I'm the first Afghan certified foreign legal advisors within Virginia Bar State. And I, beside the work I do for No One Left Behind, I also run a law firm as well, which is specialized in Afghan laws here in Northern Virginia.
You mentioned that you left Afghanistan and basically left everything behind. That process took you 4 years. I am very curious to know what your life was like during that four-year period. And also, it's never easy to leave your home, regardless of what is going on. Can you help our listeners appreciate what you were experiencing that led you to conclude that you needed to leave your country, leave everything behind, and come to the United States?
So actually it was one of the dangerous job that I was doing back in Afghanistan. So basically, I'm from Kabul, but my duty station was in Bagram. So I had to commute 2 hours one way on a daily basis from Kabul to Bagram. And I was working there in a justice center in Parwan, where it was a national security court. And it was established to prosecute all these terrorists and the Taliban over there. So part of my job was to sit on a daily basis and, you know, to try these Taliban and these Al-Qaeda groups. But I was waiting for my visa. You know, it was very dangerous. I was getting lots of phone calls, text messages to stop working with American over there. But I had no other choice. You know, I had to work in order to be able to support my family over there in Afghanistan. But at the same time, you know, I was in contact with my American friends, and I was requesting them to do something for me. So although the SIV should be a very smooth process, but, you know, beside all these background checks, like CI interview, like so many other stuff, still my case took 4 years. So at the beginning, so after 4 years, when I came into United States, the first at least 9 months was very difficult for me because, as I mentioned before, I left everybody back home, my parents, my sibling, my friends, colleagues, like everything I left back home. And it was very stressful period of my life, the beginning. Since I was new, I was jobless, you know, I was desperate, and I was missing my family, my relatives. So by the help of the organizations such as No One Left Behind and some other organizations who are helping the Afghans and Iraqis with the same process, so I was able to stand up and start my new life here in the United States, which I am very happy right now.
Can you tell me, though, how much was your life actually in jeopardy during that four-year period? I mean, you mentioned that you were working to keep your family fed and to give them what they needed to survive in that country. But it also must have been very difficult emotionally. And I'm just really wanting to understand how safe or not safe you felt during that time.
I was physically beaten by unknown armed people in 2015. Like 100 meters far from my house, and it was very stressful, very dangerous for me. So I had to change my travel time in the morning and afternoon, and I had to head myself to my relatives' houses around the Kabul city during, especially the last 2 years before coming to United States. And the reason why I was doing my work, because actually rule of law is something which is my passion, and this court which was established was to provide justice for those American soldiers or those Afghan armies who lost their life during fighting these Taliban. They established this court to be able to put those people for whatever they did against American soldiers and as well as Afghan armies. So I feel privileged still to be able to work there, although it was a very stressful, very risky, very dangerous, but I was not alone. There was hundreds and hundreds of other people's like my situation were still left behind in Afghanistan. But finally, I was lucky at least to get here in the United States. But I have hundreds of friends who are working with me there, sitting in front of these Taliban's and Al-Qaeda's. But they still, they left behind over there in Afghanistan. And they are desperate. They are texting me, calling me every day, day and night, and asking me to call it, please help me, help us. Please tell the other American advisors that we used to work for them to do something with us.
So what I'm hearing is that we need to step up in our efforts to get people who are in jeopardy here. I know that President Biden has promised to do everything that we can to get people who are in jeopardy out of the country. What do you think needs to happen in order to speed up? 4 years is obviously too long. What is it going to take, in your estimation, to speed this process up so that potentially people don't lose their lives or their livelihoods in the process? It's heartbreaking that you're getting these calls and texts from so many of your colleagues and friends and potentially family members in Afghanistan right now who don't have anywhere to turn, it seems. What do we need to do to change that situation?
Yeah, so you are right. SIV is a long journey. Although recently they issued two other programs, P1 and P2. Under P2, the applicants need to go to a third country. So after that, the State Department is going to start working on their paperwork. But since all these things happen right away in Afghanistan, some people, they don't even have the passport. Like my family back home, half of my family, they don't have passport. All the embassies are shut down. And personally, I don't know how to get my family out of Afghanistan. They are not eligible under SIV. They are not eligible under P2. And if anything happens to my family, I wouldn't be able to carry this burden, because whatever Taliban is going to do for them, it will be only because of my work with the American government. So like thousands and thousands of people are in this situation. So what I can recommend is to get everybody out of country from Afghanistan to that safe place, and then they can start working on their paperwork. But under SIV, they are doing this, but under P2, which is for those people who does not match the requirement for SIV, they have to go to a third country. Before going to the third country, their case is not going to process. Their application is not going to process.
So where are some of the people ending up that don't get to the United States right away?
Those people who get evacuated from Afghanistan, they are taking them to a military base in Qatar. And I don't know what's going to happen after that.
This is very helpful. Janice Shanwari is also here, and he served as a translator alongside the Army and Marines for over 8 years. And during that time, he personally saved 5 soldiers' lives. Upon finally receiving his special immigrant visa, he was greeted with a $35,000 check from GoFundMe to support his new life here in the United States. That's a great story. And I know, Janice, you refused to take that money, but instead began working with No One Left Behind. Tell us, obviously, you feel so drawn to this cause. What is it about this organization and this work that's so important to you?
All right. Let me start it from the beginning, like how I decided to make this organization. As you said before, I was an interpreter for 8 years, and I served in different parts of Afghanistan, serving with our military. I would say, as a U.S. citizen now, our military. As you said, I saved the life of five U.S. officers in the war. Like personally, I shot the Taliban to save these people, and this put my life in danger. Not only my life, but my life and my family's life in danger. I didn't want to leave Afghanistan, but then I transferred to Kabul from Ghazni, where I saved these people. But in Ghazni, still, I received phone calls and threat letters from Taliban to kill me or my family. And the only option I had to apply for a special immigrant visa to leave Afghanistan. I'm just like telling you the shortcut of my story. It's a long story. If I tell you, it might take hours. In 2013, when I received my visa, I was thinking that if I go to the United States, the government will take care of me because of my service. And because they say this is a special visa, you guys will be taken care of. And when I came at the airport, there was some news media. After the interview, I was expecting somebody to take me to my house or somewhere that they provided for me. And I asked my friend that, okay, where I'm going to go? There's a house or something for me. He was like, no, what are you talking about? And the only thing I had with myself was like one suitcase per person, which 30 pounds per person. And at the airport, I realized that, oh my God, where should I go? There is no program for people like us who serve for this country. There is nothing for us, no program for us. And I went to a hotel for a couple nights. I was staying in a hotel and I was very disappointed. And in the time I was in the hotel, my American friend, he set up a GoFundMe for me and emailed his friends that my friend is here and if you guys can help him. And after a couple of days when I moved to an apartment, I saw that people brought a lot of stuff for me, like households. And I saw in the account there was $35,000 for me. And I thought like, okay, I will do something because people will come like me from Afghanistan and there won't be anything for them. Let's do anything for them. Let's start anything for them. Let's like do not leave them to be a homeless here. And I decided to make an organization. That was the birth of No One Left Behind. That I spend this money, I refused this money to spend it for my family. I started No One Left Behind. And now we are huge. We helped around 10,000 people in the United States, and still we are helping a lot of people.
Janice, you know, I am obviously inspired and moved by your story and that you've come to this country after having served us in your own country, and you have continued to serve us now in a different way. And yet there's so much more to do. I'm listening to you tell me about people who are calling and texting you, seeking help. What is your sense of the scale of the problem right now in Afghanistan? Give our listeners some understanding of what is going on and what's needed at this point to help folk in Afghanistan.
If I tell you, I was receiving this call since I came here, since I was appeared on the social media as a volunteer to help and raise their voices here and fight for their rights here. I was receiving phone calls every day and asking for help. And that's what I was doing. That's what this No One Left Behind us. I'm very thankful from all my team members here, my board members, ambassadors. Everybody's doing a great job, especially now in this critical situation. And those people were contacting us from Afghanistan to raise their voice, to have the American people and the American government to hear their voice. And the only way that they raised their voice was us here, me and my other friends, that we were raising their voice. We were talking to the people. We were like fighting for their rights. Even when they were coming here before, they were sending us emails like, hey, Janice or Khaled or whoever is with the team, James or Maria, we are coming to Afghanistan. Please take care of us. And what we would do, like go to the airport, pick them up, because I experienced very bad thing here when I came. And I didn't want them to feel unwelcome, to feel something. And we had, at least we can pay something for their service for this country. Welcoming them at the airport with the U.S. flag, bringing them to their new apartment, furnishing their apartments for no cost, because this is very expensive to pay for everything. As I said before, they are coming with one suitcase and furnishing their apartment, find them cars, find them jobs, and explain the challenges here, like what's going to happen. And because it's a different in culture and everything. But right now, since President Biden announced that we are withdrawing our troops, this evacuation started. Trust me that I'm receiving more than 100 calls. I didn't sleep since the evacuation started. That's why I was late. I went to the airport last night to see some people and welcoming them. I was up to 3 in the morning at the Dallas airport, and I was really tired. That's why I couldn't make the call. And as I said before people were coming with one or two suitcases per person or per family, right now, those people come with nothing. They need more than they did before. They even do not, they're not able to bring like clothes for their children, because hundreds of thousands of people rushed to the airport from different parts of Afghanistan to save their lives. As you saw the news, like even people were hanging on the planes to leave Afghanistan. And I asked some of those people why, and they said they would love to die in this way than dying by Taliban and killing by Taliban. They would prefer this way to die, to get killed, but not getting killed by Taliban, not torture them in front of their family and kill them. And people don't know what to do right now. And whoever worked for the military, whoever worked for the American, whoever worked for other NGOs, agencies, news reporters, everybody is in great danger right now. And the only option they have is to come to the airport. And we do not blame them, because they are in great danger with their families. And the Taliban already started searching, knocking the door and asking for these people to kill them. And as I heard from social media, couple people are missing since the Taliban came. A lot of people are missing. People come and take them out and they never come back. As you said before, like what's the solution? How we can expedite this process? And if government is listening to me, if President Biden is listening to me, I already say, like, for God's sake, it's too late. Since 3 months, let's start this evacuation. We don't have time. We don't have time. Please do it, because we are just doing nothing and just like talking and talking. Please do it. But nobody listened to me, even though everybody knew this thing is happening. The Taliban are coming again, because when the American leave Afghanistan, I said in a couple interviews that our government is not able to fight. They have the ability. But they're not only Taliban. There are like a couple super power countries that they're supporting Taliban. Only our country is not able to stand against these 4, 5, 6 countries and fight. For God's sake, please help these people, especially who ever worked for the U.S. military. But no one listened to me. Now we are in a really critical situation. On the one side of the, on the end of the gate, the Taliban are looking for these people. In this side of the gate, they're not allowed to get to the airport. And I would ask President Biden to expedite it, to send more and more planes to evacuate these people before they get killed and recognized by Taliban. And recently, the Taliban met a lot of checkpoints. They are recognizing all these people. And if they go back home, that's why they cannot go home. They prefer to sleep there. If they go back home, they will chase them and kill them. And we should expedite it and extend this process. If I'm pretty much sure we cannot do it within 10 or 15 days, which is the deadline for this process. We need to extend this process for at least a month to evacuate everybody. I don't want them to get killed because of their service to our government.
Janice, how many people are we talking about right now who are left behind in your estimation? How many people we're talking about?
As I see with their families, there might be between 50,000 to 60,000 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a lot, but it's certainly doable. It strikes me that that's achievable. That's achievable.
It is doable if we do it on the right way. It is doable. And as I said, it's already delayed. We had to do it like 2-3 months ago. We wouldn't be in this situation right now. And there's not only problem in Kabul. There's problem in Qatar. My wife was there. My wife was stuck in Afghanistan, and she made it to Qatar. She spent like 4 or 5 days in Qatar. Very bad situation. Thousands of people, only one bathroom for them, very hot, and no food, no water. The only thing they give them, like just a bottle of water with some snacks. Very bad situation.
I've been to Qatar, and it can be very warm there. So she has no food and water for how many days? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, they just gave them like some snacks and water. That's it. She could just skip Afghanistan with only clothes. And she has that clothes for 5 days now. Hmm. Thousands of people, same like her. And this is the fifth day she is in Qatar, and she has been promised she's an American citizen, to be transferred to America. But this is the fifth day she's still there. She's coming to the airport and then go back. Okay, sorry, there's no flight. And 2 flights landed last night. I was there to see the people, how people are coming. As I said before, everybody's coming with nothing, with no money, no clothes, nothing. And now I'm calling on my people, on all American people, because the government is not funding us.
Yeah.
And we are in a few weeks, we will receive a big crowd of people. And these people need shelter. These people need clothes. These people need water. These people need everything, even for their kids. They need anything.
Well, I'm going to put out a call. I'm putting out a call right here, right now, for the American philanthropic community to step up. And I'm confident they will. I'm putting out a call right now.
Thank you so much.
To help these folk. And, you know, Americans have proven in different circumstances when they're these kinds of humanitarian crisis that they step up. These are our new citizens, and I'm calling on all Americans. You know, we need to organize in a way that we can get support to these folk. I want to reach out to my friends at the Red Cross and other humanitarian organizations here in the United States to organize. I mean, people have clothes in their closets that they don't wear. People have other items of furniture and other items that I'm sure we can begin to shed and share with people who need help. And we'll get this organized, I'm sure, so that you don't have to worry about what happens when a person arrives. They come and they have at least some basics to get them started. So I'm glad you let us know about the nature of this problem. And this gives me and all of us in our sector, in the nonprofit sector, and some businesses and even government agencies can step up and help make a difference here, Janice. And thank you so much for all you're doing and the risk that you put yourself in and your family in to help American soldiers and to help now others who are similarly situated as you were to land safely. This is a big crisis, and I know and I'm hopeful that our American friends and citizens will step up and support you. As far as your organization, how can Americans go about supporting your organization?
Well, they can go to our website, to noonelift.org, and they can donate there, and that will go directly to all those SIVs, as I explained before.
Do you have a way to collect items in addition to money? Do you have something set up where, if people wanted to send sort of care packages or something like that, do you have a way for them to do that?
Maybe Maria will explain that part better for you. But as I said before, in here, we work, all the ambassadors work as a bridge between the Afghan SIVs and American in here. I just passed the message to the people that these people are now, I would tell you, they did their part. to serve for this country, and now they are here. Now this is our duty, our mission, to do our part to help these people and here. And maybe Maria will explain like how you can like send a donation or everything. Yeah, that was all my message that I always did. As I said before, I'm their voice here to the American people, and I will try. I wouldn't be sitting and just watching. I will raise my voice. I will fight for these people as much as I can to bring everybody here.
Maria, are you on right now? Can we get you to talk about what we can do to support No One Left Behind?
Yep, I am here. So I wanted to highlight how small our organization is. There's 13 board members that are all volunteers, and then our ambassadors all have other full-time jobs, and they do this. I don't know how they find enough hours in the day to do everything that they do, in addition to taking care of their families and working their full-time jobs, our 6 ambassadors. We only recently just bought on a few members of paid staff as contractors to help us grow during this time. So what we are doing is we are able to provide emergency financial relief in the form of emergency rent, grants for cars, grants to get vehicles fixed, help with medical bills. Those are the types of aid that we're able to support financially, and we have been for years. When it comes to providing goods, such as getting these families set up with furnishings and clothes and those types of things that Janice described, we are enlarging our organization and network of support right now to be able to connect American people to the local relief agencies that are going to organize these types of things. You know, in every city across America that is taking in Afghan SIVs and Iraqi SIVs that have come to the country, since we are such a small organization of people, we need to connect and work with our local resettlement agencies, which we do, Catholic and Lutheran Charities, the YMCA, and that is the best way for people to get physical donations of household goods and clothes, is to work through their local relief agencies, and we can help connect the American people to these local agencies that can deliver things and accept hard donations like that. We're expanding that effort now to get ready for the influx.
Well, that's great to hear. And I know these organizations pretty well, and I know they will step up. The president of the YMCA of USA is a boyhood friend of mine. And I know that the Y will step in and do whatever they can. Catholic Relief Charities has been an accredited charity with us for many years. And I know that these organizations will do everything possible to help you. And if you need any assistance connecting with anyone, you know, please let us know. We'll do what we can to make sure that your organization is connected with the people in these groups who can help you. We also have here Aliyah Nadim, who is a Department of Defense legislative liaison and recently worked for Senator Mikulski. She's also an Air Force Reserve officer and civil service employee, and she spent 14 years of experience working in intelligence, law enforcement, and fraud investigations. Aliyah, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast. I notice you're a board member with No One Left Behind. What is your role in assisting at this point? And tell us a little bit about your background as well.
You know, one of the things is, you know, having grown up in Iraq between 91 and 95, I was able to sort of witness the first war that happened in Iraq, the first Gulf War. So, I was about 9 years old, and a U.S. military aircraft landed where I lived in Mosul, northern Iraq. And I went up to the helicopter and asked them to take me home because I saw... It was an American helicopter. I saw on their uniform the American flags. And they ended up not taking me, which I'm not sure if anybody would, you know, land in a foreign country and take a child. And so why this brings us to where we are today is having seen the image of the U.S. aircraft, the C-17, in Kabul, you know, full of people, and you have people clinging to it. That has really sort of stirred up, you know, a lot of feelings for me personally, and makes me even more grateful that I've been working with No One Left Behind. And so having had that experience as a child, and then present day watching these people try to get out of Afghanistan, one, because some of them believed in what the U.S. was doing. They believed in American values and principles and wanted a better life for themselves. And now that's no longer an option. So they want out because they know what's going to happen under the Taliban. They're not going to have that. So I am really proud to be part of No One Left Behind because we've been doing this for years. Before this whole evacuation, before all this happened, we have been working this. And so to me, it's the least I can do. I feel very lucky that I was able to get out of Iraq. I feel extremely privileged that I get to serve in our military. And so the least I can do is try to help the people that are trying to get out, because I could be on the other side over there in Iraq or in Afghanistan trying to get to a better place. So this is what I've sort of dedicated my life to helping them.
Well, you know, one of the things I know a lot of Americans are concerned about are children. And you mentioned children, that when you were a child, what happened. We're also obviously very concerned about what we hear may happen to women. What are some of the big fears that we have? Are they founded, in your estimation?
Absolutely. I think they're 100% founded. Having been a little girl who grew up in Iraq, you're definitely a second-class citizen. At the age of not even 12, I was already scheduled to marry somebody.
12?
At 12. I knew, now I didn't have to get married at 12, but I knew by the time I was at least 16, or when you have your menstruation, that's how they do it for women there, you can now legally get married there. And that's sort of the benchmark. And that is a real thing that happens. So I knew by the time that I was probably 16, and this was sort of talked about openly, that I would be married. Women are not encouraged to go to school. The benchmark in Iraq was about eighth grade. At eighth grade, you could quit and it was perfectly acceptable. It was not encouraged. I could not leave the house unless there was a male with me, and it had to be a male family member. And I remember what that felt like. I remember it's very interesting what freedom feels like and what it doesn't feel like. And so when we look at Afghanistan, what we see happening to women and girls, they're not going to have a chance. Those women and girls are not going to have a chance. And the ones who did over the past 20 years, who tried to go to college, who tried to make a better life for themselves, they're going to have a target on their back. We've seen the Taliban come out and promise that equal rights for women. The reality, that's just not true. That's just not happening. All the data, all the intelligence that we've seen, it does not prove that they're going to treat women and girls kindly.
Wow. What are you doing specifically with the organization right now, given your capacity and experience?
Right now, one of the things that I've really tried to focus on is specifically connecting with folks that are in Afghanistan right now. So a lot of times we get emails from folks on the ground, sort of living in their own personal hell, is what I like to say, because they have no hope. And so what I've been doing is just continuing to reach out to them, assuring them that the United States will do the right thing. And I know that sounds really small, but I remember when I was in Iraq and I didn't have any family member there with me, and sometimes just somebody calling me to say, hey, you know, we're going to get you out, that was sometimes enough just to help folks. The other thing that I've worked on is I've really tried to bring a social work feel to No One Left Behind. Obviously in nonprofits, it's very big on, you know, fundraising, ensuring that we have resources to help the folks. But there's also a social work aspect. There's a psychological effect here. So I've really worked and partnered with the University of Southern California, where I'm an alumnus as well, and to try to bring that piece into it to No One Left Behind as well.
I noticed you're a writer for Rally Point, and I want to direct our listeners to Rally Point so that they can hear more about your stories growing up in Iraq as a child and some of the military matters today that that you see. And you also lead the Women's Initiative Group for the Air Force. Tell me about that. What is the Women's Initiative Group for the Air Force?
Yeah, so it's a group of women, and we're really just trying to update policies that are inclusive for women. You'd think that the military is pretty progressive, but you know, the military started out as a male organization, and sometimes we have policies that are not inclusive for women. And I think I kind of got this from, you know, living in Iraq, having been treated sometimes like a second-class citizen. I'm probably a little bit sensitive to it. So as I've joined the military, I've really, you know, tried to say, hey, you know, why can't females wear their hair the way they want to? Why is it based on a 1950s male standard, right? And so I've tried to bring those things to light through that as well. And a lot of that shaped my experience growing up in Iraq.
We also have here Sonia Nowruz, who is going to speak with us a bit about her role with the organization. Sonia, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thank you so much.
So, Sonia, what is your role with the organization, and what have you been focused on here in the last few weeks?
Thank you. So I recently joined No One Left Behind. And the reason that I joined No One Left Behind is I was seeing what is really going on in Afghanistan. And I was like, let me just see if I can at least help, at least just kind of, that would give my heart a good feeling that, okay, you're at least helping one of your Afghans who are in trouble, who are in this insecurity at this moment. So it's almost a week that I have joined No One Left Behind.
Where are you from, Sonia?
I'm from Afghanistan. I'm originally from Kabul, Afghanistan, and I have came to U.S. Through SIV as well. My husband had SIV case. So,
and how have you been able to assist the folk either coming here or who are still there trying to get here?
I still do have problem with that. So the help that I can provide them, to help them with some kind of instructions, how to do things better if they really want to come over, if they really worked on behalf of the U.S. government. So I provide them all kind of instructions that they need. Some of them really need help with completing their forms. Some of them really, really have problem with getting their recommendations from even their local officers in ground. So which one of them was my own sister. At least it took her almost 1 year to get a HR or recommendation letter from her own local office. So kind of sort of that.
Well, Sonia, I'm so grateful that you're taking this on. And I know people in your home country are also really blessed, in my words, blessed that you're stepping up and helping in the way that you are. Mariah, if I could get you back on just to tell us about where we go from here with the organization and its work, and again, to remind our listeners how they can be helpful.
In the coming days, while this evacuation is still going on, we need to do everything we can to support the people that are escaping Afghanistan right now. There is a massive civil military effort to attempt to contact people, to help them complete their visa applications, to advocate to the State Department for a better process to get people out quickly, and to fund this evacuation. Numerous organizations are attempting to fund this evacuation privately because the need is just too great for what the government resources are right now. When this evacuation ends or slows down, and I do hope that we have a longer period of time than just August 31st, with additional resources coming to help us to implement this evacuation, there is going to be a very large need of thousands of Afghan families arriving to the United States. You can donate through our organization at noonelef.org, or you can find a local organization, one of the many resettlement agencies that are going to help the Afghans that are arriving. We have them starting to arrive in Northern Virginia right now, and we're already mobilizing a network of support. You can always come to our organization for information and ideas of how to help, even if you want to start something in your own community. That is something that our ambassadors across the country excel at, is connecting the Afghan community to the resources and the people that are willing to help them.
All right. Is there anything before we stop recording that if there's other points that you think we should make? Is there anything else, Mariah, you think we should cover?
In the few days before Kabul fell, we received a really generous grant from the Greg and Jody Perlman Change Reaction Foundation, and they enabled us to start buying commercial tickets for SIV families leaving Afghanistan because the government was just not moving fast enough to evacuate them. And we thought we would have a few months to get a bunch of families out. And nobody knew Kabul was going to fall this fast. And we only had 3 days and we got 8 families out through commercial flights before the airport shut down. And we just really want to continue to do what we can to help. But we're very grateful that we even had that chance.
Mariah, thank you so much. And I want to thank all of you. That was Mariah Smith, Khalid Hamidi. We also had Aliyah Nadim, Sonia Nawuz. We've also had Janice Shenwari, the co-founder of the organization, could actually spend some time with us today, passionately expressing the nature of the problem and what it will take to potentially resolve the issue of getting people here who are in serious jeopardy back in Afghanistan right now. And as I said, I'm hoping that our philanthropic community will step up and support these young people and older people too, who've gone through a lot and who are going through a lot as a result of the transition now that's going on in Afghanistan. This is the Heart of Giving podcast. It's powered by bbbgive.org. I'm Art Taylor, your host, and I thank you for listening. And please do what you can to support organizations like No One Left Behind. Get these Afghanistan citizens settled here in the United States. Thank you.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's terms of service.